This episode of The Honeydew is sponsored by Upstart, Skillshare, and MyBookie. More on that later. Let's get into the do.
You're listening to The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here at Studio Jeans doing it at your mom's house. I'm Ryan Sickler. Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. Make sure you sign up for my email list on the website. If you have, like I've said, you'd already know I was headed out with Tom Segura in October back on the road. Go check my calendar out. You'll see all the dates. The website here, thehoneydewpodcast.com. That's where you go for everything Honeydew related, the merch, stories, all that stuff. Info for everything is there. And thank you. Every week I say thank you, and I'm going to continue to say thank you. Thank you for the support, the messages, the emails, the songs, the social media, the license plate frames, the artwork, the everything you guys send. Thank you. Thank you for the support. And thank you for supporting our sponsors. That's how we keep a free show free over here at your mom's house. Make sure you subscribe to the Your Mom's House YouTube page. That is huge. And always download and review the podcast. So now if you're new here, what we do over here is we highlight the low lights. We have a little fun in that darkness. And I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. And today, our storyteller is the one and only Sam Tripoli, everybody. Sam Tripoli.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome to The Honeydew, Sam.
It's good
Tripoli.
To be here. I love you with all my heart, Ryan. It's good to be here on The Honeydew. I remember when you were talking about getting it going, so it's good to see it like kicking a lot of ass.
Yeah, and you've got a new podcast. Well, it's probably not new, but newer.
Newer.
Yeah.
I mean, dog, I mean, like, we
fantastic.
Started way back.
You
like,
had long hair.
I don't
hair.
Know how long ago.
You had long hair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, we were just talking about, like, going out to, where were we? Where was there?
The L.A. Cabaret.
Dude, crazy
in Encino.
Times. We started stand up back in the day when like our black comic friends had to go through separate entrances. That's how long we've been doing comedy.
In the 90s. It was in the 90s, bro. It was in the 90s.
Yeah, man, we've come a long way, but I remember you talking about doing The Honeydew, and I was really happy for you because I think it, you know, you're a great podcast. I just think when we all started, you know, whether it was the Crab Feast, the Naughty Show. Like, we started, like, 8 years. We're coming up on the 8-year anniversary.
You're how I met Gareth Reynolds. Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, just think, like, that was prehistoric times of podcasting.
Yeah.
And now look like what we're, you know, this beautiful place where these guys who I love so much have put together a wonderful empire. So, it's pretty cool. So, I had this one feed, and it was like, it started with the Naughty Show, and that, and, you know, after you, after you've interviewed your 15th bisexual, biracial, midget porn star, you kind of go, I think I've heard all the stories. So, you know, I've heard all the weird stuff to shove weird things. And so I said, you know, we're done with that. And then, you know, we had a, then I did a couple other podcasts, and the last podcast flamed out. And, you know, kind of around then it was 2016, and the election was going on, and I just started seeing some stuff, and I was always in the conspiracies. I've always loved it. You know, to me, the first conspiracy ever is Santa Claus. That's the first one.
Well, that is.
Everybody's lying to you, and yeah. It takes, like, a Jew telling you that shit ain't real, right?
Right. Yeah.
So it's like, that's kind of where it's at. And then, you
know. Nadav's the kid who got beat up for telling everybody the truth.
Yeah. You know, for me, it was my next door neighbor's mom.
She told you?
Yeah, like four. She's like, Santa isn't real. I'm like, you ruined this shit for
me. Did you tell your parents that?
No, dude, I knew snitches get stitches very early. In life, you know?
So, well, they weren't getting shit from Santa.
Dude, so. I've always wanted to like wear a Santa suit, just take a shit on her fucking porch, set it on fire, be like, Santa's real, motherfucker, you know? So I was always into that. And then, like, kind of I did the show, and, like, one of my best friends is this cat named Eddie Bravo, and he's really into conspiracies, and we just kind of hit it off. And so the show just kind of grew, and, I, like, people like Duncan Trussell, Doug Stanhope started doing the show, and it just kind of took off, and it's, like, it's kind of crazy how big.
What do you call it?
It's called Tinfoil Hat with Sam Tripoli.
Yes.
I have that, and I have the old Reliable that I love doing, which is Punch Drunk Sports with Jason Tebow. And whenever Ari can show up or wants to show up or he's got enough minutes on his flip phone, you know what I'm saying? So he'll the guy has a flip. Really Who has does. Flip phones? Ari Shaffir, my dad, and drug dealers. That's it. Right? Like, how shady is a flip phone guy? Ladies, if a guy's got a flip phone, he's cheating on you. He's not even dating you, but he's already cheating on you. So we do that and we talk sports, and it's like I don't ever see that show ever ending because I just love talking sports. So that's why I always tell people when you're starting a podcast, do a podcast about something you love.
Yeah, for real.
Because you won't go to work. I mean, the blessings is never going to work.
Yeah.
Because you're doing something you love doing.
That's right.
I love talking.
Yeah.
That's really all I want to do. I just did a episode on the CW's Mysteries
yeah, I
Uncoded.
Saw that. Congrats.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you, dude.
Yeah.
Thank you. If you want to see, you haven't seen, you like conspiracies, go to CWC.com. Go to Mysteries Decoded, and you could... They got a link, and it's mine's the Montauk episode, and the episode did really well, and I enjoyed that, but it's nothing like a podcast.
Yeah.
You just come in, you bang it out 2 hours, like we both do two shows a day, you know, when we record, get in, get out, and you just go on with your life. It's a blessing.
What's your social media, your website?
Everything's at Sam Tripoli.
All right.
I even jump on early. I mean, It's at Sam Tripoli on Twitter, Instagram, Adult Friend Finder, Grindr, fucking where black people meet, you know, you name it. I just start grabbing it so nobody else gets it, man. I ain't gonna visit it. Like, there's a ghost shell, but I got it, you know? So it's like across, and at samtripoli.com for all my dates. I'm just telling you, man, I get people doing fucking my websites and they just disappear. I've had one woman, Vane Jane, who's did my Sam Tripoli. She's the only one who's ever knocked it out park. Everybody else, it's like drug dealers, hookers, and web designers are the shadiest motherfuckers.
The same people with flip phones. And your dad.
They all have flip phones. I mean, minutes.
Well, I've been wanting to get you on here, and I'm stoked that you're here because I really want to hear some of your stories. I know you have an impeccable self-defense record in court on traffic tickets.
Well, it is kind of crazy. I am 16-3 in traffic.
That's unbelievable, bro.
You know, but when I hear black people complaining about how bad the cops treat them, I've been pulled over 20 times. What? Because I'm a bad driver? Yeah. But the point is, I got pulled over a lot too, and I just go to court. And when I go to court, I go, "Fuck, man." They just give ugly people tickets. You ever go to court? There's no supermodels. There's no Instagram models. It's just ugly motherfuckers. And you're like, what are they saying about me, dude? I don't got good angles. Fuck you. So I make them so they always have to like, shit, that's my thing. I told you on the last time, I wear suits all the time. You got people showing up in FUBU. Like, where do they even
all
sell
the time.
FUBU?
I've been in court where I wear FUBU, bro.
Do you wear FUBU?
No. I got, last time I was in court, a judge scolded everyone for getting up in t-shirts with holes in them and flip-flops. And I was like, yeah. So thinking,
dress
I'm
up.
In a suit. He's going to let me go. He didn't give a fuck. He didn't
Dude,
give a fuck.
I get there early and I listen to the suckers who actually get lawyers for traffic school. And you listen to the motions that they're doing. And I do all the motions. Motion for to dismiss. Motion for continuance. Motion to... Get a witness, and then, nope, denied. So I told the story in the last one, but, like, one of my greatest things is this. I always cross-examine the cop.
I know. I love that you do this.
I set him up strategically,
I love
too.
That you do this. I didn't even know you could do this.
Dude, listen, I'm so serious about this shit. I didn't tell you this. I subpoenaed my girlfriend.
Yeah, you've subpoenaed.
I sent her a subpoena. I'm like, you got to show up on this day for court.
Or you're getting arrested. Or you're getting a failure to appear on your ass.
Like, you're showing up. She's like, did you just subpoena me? I'm like, yeah, I did. This shit's real. Okay?
Oh,
so,
God.
So I subpoenaed this. I'm going to tell two stories. I'm going to tell the more recent one with my girlfriend. I subpoenaed her. And what happened was, is that I was going down the street and I was making a left, but they blocked it off, but they didn't have anything. So you're about to turn into all these like traffic horses, you know, that you can't turn into. So then I'm like, I'll fucking enter. And then boom, traffic's coming at me. So I swerve and I'm stuck in the middle. And then I see this only entrance. And then I see a cop there and I flip out. So I drive all the way down this middle lane, right? I watch. I go, dude, don't pull me over. Don't pull me. I watch this dude do a 17-point turn. I'm not even lying to you.
He's
like,
coming.
Like, he's just like. I'm like, is he really doing that? He did it, dude. He pulls me over, right? And I'm like, dude, I mean, like, I had nowhere to go. He's like, I don't know about that. So he writes me a ticket. I go, I'll see you in court.
You tell him?
I always tell him, dude. This thing's going long. This is I play the long game, dog.
You're going to miss your kid's fucking baseball game. I'll tell you that right now, bro.
Buy birthday gifts now because you ain't going to be at the party. So the day shows up. I continue it. You always continue as far as you can continue it until they're like, you got to come in. And what happened was the cops used to not show up, but now because they need money, they make them show up. So you always sit there and you're looking for your cop. You're like, man, here he comes. He shows up. So I show up. And I go up and I start to, we start the thing and, you know, we start the cross-examination. I go up to the board and the board has the intersection. And I'm like, officer, how would you explain the traffic? Can we agree the traffic was moving east to west to east? And he's like, yes, I will agree with that. How would you say the traffic was moving through this intersection? Was it steady? Was it thick? He goes, it was steady. And I'm like, you're saying it's going this way all the way through. Okay. Your Honor, that's not true. And I call my girlfriend up, and she says that that intersection has been blocked up. And I just start grilling this dude, man. I'm grilling her. Dude. And it's like when a ref is getting paid to throw the fight, and the fighter who's supposed to win starts taking shots, and they're like, okay. Like, okay, Miss Tripoli, you go sit down. I go, okay. I'm like, that's a weird thing. She makes me wait to the end of court.
The judge.
The judge makes me wait to the end of court because I just gotten that this dude was lying. Makes me go, like, waits 2 hours to the end of court. This motherfucking cop is just waiting there to see what happens. And she goes, here's what's going to happen. You technically broke the law. But in the eyes of justice, I'm going to let you go. But I just got to let you know, you're basically an asshole. You have such a bad attitude. I want to find you guilty, but I can't right now. And so she let me go. So that was my last case. Like
that was number 16 right there. Congrats on 16.
I just ring the bell.
I have to tell you, I don't know if I've told this story on here. I repeat a lot of stories, but I don't know if I've ever told this story anywhere. I had to go to jury duty. I got stuck. I pushed it as long as I could. Then I got stuck. And I used to throw them in the trash. And then I got this fucking red notice in the mail. Shit. And I was like, oh, shit. And I took it. I'll never forget when I finally went in. That I handed it to the lady working. She goes, oh, you got one of these. And I was like, yeah, what's that?
You're in trouble.
She's like, you're getting on something. I was on a 5-week case.
Oh, my
5-week
God.
Drugs, weapons, everything. It was on 5 weeks. But what I didn't know is that you could do that in traffic court or anything. So
you can get a jury?
No. I didn't know you could cross-examine the cop. I didn't know that in traffic court. I thought it was just a simple matter. I didn't know you could do all that. So I learned that from you. So I get called to jury duty, and we walk in, and there's these gentlemen over here that you could tell are probably from a business. And then there's this homeless guy that definitely looks crazy. And as we're filing in, he's just going, he's nodding at office. He's going, the sun, the moon, the truth. The sun, the moon, the truth. And I know... I have a cousin who's crazy.
And
I was
he probably listens to Tim Foyle Hat.
He probably. And I was like, that shit's coming out. We're going to find out what that sun to moon to truth is all about. He's not just throwing it out there random. That shit's going to come into play. Yeah, I don't know when, but that shit's going to come back.
Johnny Appleseed over here.
So I'm talking to this dude next to me in the jury, and we end up, they get up, and the judge says, look, this should be a very quick case. There's not much evidence. It's a matter of whether you think right or wrong here. But the gist of it is this homeless crazy dude is representing himself, and whatever he's doing, whatever you said, that lawyer would stand up, he'd look over, he'd stand up. But whatever they did, he did. Okay. And he would say, like the lady's giving her opening statements, he would go, I object. And the judge was the most patient. I've had two very patient judges. This guy said, sir, you can't do that right now. That'll come. But you can't. And he's like, okay, all right, Your Honor. But he kept doing it. He's like, I object. He's like, not, son, not now. Like, we can do that. We'll get there. So we end up going to lunch. And the guy I'm sitting next to, I'm telling him about the sun, the moon. He's like, I didn't hear him say it. I go, he said it. He kept repeating it as a mantra, like as we're walking in. I was like, that shit's going to come out. I know it is. And what happened really was this place in Santa Monica that houses homeless people, veterans, you know, people that are halfway housed, just, yes, you know, all kinds of groups of people who need assistance. And it's a live in and play, and they live and work in that building as well, all these people. And basically there's this guy got crazy at the crazy house. And our argument was like, you're mad at this guy for doing what he does where he's supposed to do it?
Yeah.
And we had a former DA in our jury, and she said, look, this lady, this lawyer for the company is not very good. She said, this man is behaving, it's inappropriate, but it's appropriate for where he is. You don't want that out on the street. You don't want that. So she's like, and what I'm guessing is that they get money, they're state funded, they rotate the beds, and if they don't get this guy, because he's been there for 2 years, if they don't get him out of that building, they don't get more money for that next patient that comes in. This is her belief. So then she's saying, like, they say, well, he's allowed to come on the property for food and community, but if he's such a disturbance, why are you letting him on the property at all? It didn't make sense to any of us. Now, the company thought it should be open and shut because he was aggressive toward people at times, but they were coming after him. They really were. So he said he finally got up after lunch. We see him out at lunch, and he's skateboarding. He's probably in his 40s, you know, that leather skin. He's got a long board. He skates by. He's like, you motherfuckers. And he goes across the street. It's the guys from the house, you know. So we come back from lunch, and the defense goes first. And then it's his chance to get up and cross-examine.
Oh, this is get your popcorn.
So, oh, we all couldn't wait. So he would look at each. First of all, he was allowed to select his jurors. He was allowed to let six, I think, go. So he's going down the line. He's like, have you ever gotten free tickets to anything? He would ask people weird shit, like, because that was his conspiracy. Like, oh,
I love it.
And he would go, did it have a barcode on it? We're like, yeah, all the tickets have barcodes. He's like, okay, no, juror number two can go.
Dude, there's a method to his madness.
So he finally goes to me, and he goes, and where do you live? And I go, you don't need to know that. And he goes, okay, he can stay. And he moves. I was like, yeah, ain't none of your fucking business. You don't need to know where I live. I'm in this court. That's all you need to know. So we come back from lunch, and now it's his turn to get up. And he, like I say, he's cross-examining, and he's gone. He's like, oh, yeah, well, my sister did drugs, and she ended up sleeping with my stepfather. So that's a whole nother story, but we'll get into that later. And we would be like, what the fuck's going on? And the judge is trying to keep him focused.
This is like the Adult Swim of the legal system.
And this is what I love about conspiracy theorists, because he's definitely one. So he's talking to the one guy up there, and he goes, you mentioned you're a Mason? He goes, I am a Mason. And he goes, what branch or whatever he has? And I mean, he knew so much about Masons. He's like, what this and what's that and what's your code and what's your arms? And I was like, holy shit. But it makes sense that that guy, a conspiracy guy, would know about. He knew so many.
Yeah.
So he finally goes, ladies and gentlemen, three things always come out. The sun, the moon, the truth. I said, there it is. I looked at that guy. I go, there it is, bro. I told you it was coming. Three things always come out. The sun, the moon, the truth. He called it back, and I was laughing so hard. So we have to go back and, you know, think about this. And unanimously, we all wanted to be like, fuck them for doing that, this to this guy. Like, they thought it was so, you know, all. But it was a weird thing. It was, did he break the rules? And we were like, yeah, he did break the rules.
Break the rules of the house?
Yes, of the place he stayed. He did break the rules. But again,
does that supersede the law?
They're allowed to kick him out. So we had to say he broke the rules because he did break the rules. One guy, just for consciousness, was like, I'm not going to I can't put this on my conscience.
So it's not like the death penalty.
No, it's just, but he gets kicked out of this. Okay. So the poor dude now is homeless. and he doesn't have a place to stay tonight. But they're telling us if we don't get this decision in by 4 p.m., we got to go the next day. And none of us want to come back. Yeah. It's a one day. I've never had a one dayer. So we the guy comes in to tell us, and we go, no, we have our decision. He goes, okay, you made it just in time. So we sit down, and they say, you know, guilty. But the business will never know how close they were to not being right. They just thought they were arrogant about it and thought they had
I have a couple.
But wait, I got to tell you how it ends, because it's not over with him just.
Oh, kidding. Really?
He doesn't have a place to stay tonight. So when I do all my paperwork and everything and I leave the courthouse, I walk out and face down on the grass, there's my guy, handcuffed with three cops standing around him. I go, hey, that's the guy that was just in my case. What happened? He goes, oh, he took his skateboard and he started beating the car of the guy that fucking took him to court. He went over and bashed his windshield and everything.
So he's got a place to stay.
He's got a place to stay. I said, he ain't crazy after all. He's going to jail. He's crazy. I'm like, no, he's got a fucking place to sleep tonight.
Yeah.
Or for however long you put him in there. But he took him, went right over there and just started fucking that guy's car up.
Hey, man.
That was my one
day. Truth to power, dog. Truth to power. I have a couple comments on that. First of all, I agree with you. Like, he went crazy in a place. You go crazy.
That's where he's supposed to be.
Why are the cops here? That was my opinion when Fred Willard got busted beating off at the Tiki Bar on Santa Monica, which is an adult bookstore. That's where you go to beat off. He's not beating off near a playground. He's not beating off in a library. He's at the jerk-off place jerking off. Thank you, Fred, for doing it in the right zoned area. Second of all, dude, method your mad. It's like when I went to China and I saw no car accidents. You're like, maybe they're not bad drivers, Asians. Maybe they're so good, we fuck them up.
Right? That's great.
If we
love
play
it.
Basketball with Michael, with Magic Johnson, he's passing us. We don't catch the pass.
He looks bad.
He looks bad. So this guy's out here asking about the moon, the stars, and the truth, and you guys think he's crazy. He's operating on another level, probably in a different simulation or some shit like that, where that argument would work. That's my opinion on that story.
That is hilarious.
Can I just say one more thing?
Yeah, of course.
I've been gigging with this dude forever. He is easily one of the funniest dudes out there. You kill all the time.
I appreciate that coming from you. And the thing I really like is I like gigging with you because you ever have that person, there's that person that's always on a show once in a while, you're like, I'm not going to have a good set. You know, this guy's here again. You never do that? Like, you get a mediocre one, like, every time, it's this motherfucker. Every time I want to set a show with you, it's always a good show, and I usually do well, and every time I come off stage, you always say the same thing. You're like, bro, what happened? Don't worry, man. You'll get them next time. You always say it to me. It's one of my favorite. I can't wait to close out and walk backstage to have you hug me and say, you'll get them next time.
You're a fucking killer, dude. You're a hard dude to follow. There's some people that I don't think get the respect that they do for how hard they can be to follow. You're one of them. Jackie Fabulous
that.
Is one of them. You ever try to follow her?
She's great.
She's a murderer.
Joey Diaz is hard to follow.
Well, Joey Diaz is known as being hard to follow. Yeah. Like, dude, that's what we call that education.
It makes you so much stronger when you follow Joey and do good. Yeah.
I think the most underrated comic that I know is Tony Rock. I think, like, as much as that guy has, he's still so under. I mean, like, the dude is a wordsmith, man.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just, like, even though he's got a million things going on. And by the way, I just want to say your teleprompter reading was amazing. You should give classes to Sebastian Maniscalco for when he did the VMAs. He was, like, in the middle of his act, and you see him just, like, raccoonize these fucking.
Well, it took me 4 months, so
well,
I appreciate it.
I love Sebastian. It was good. I was just busting his balls. I actually gave you a compliment on your stand-up because I wanted to lead back to. You can see my special at samtribbley.com. Both of them. The I shot at the Viper Room. I shot my and I broke it in two because nobody has attention spans anymore. So I have one at so one's called Zero Fucks and the other one's called Armageddon.
Both from the Viper Room?
Both from the Viper Room. You just go to samtribbley.com. You can watch them for free.
That's great.
But you are one of my favorites. We did Vegas together.
Yeah, dude.
That was fun.
I love it. I love gigging with you.
I'll
it's
do it again.
Fun.
Like, I'm just all about, like, that's why I'm so glad this podcast is hitting for me, for you and for me. Like,
yeah.
I'm in a different world now with this podcast. You know, I'm at fucking Dodger games and, like, Mexicans come out and go, hey, dog. I'm like, what? He's like, are you Sam Triple? I'm like, depends. Depends.
It depends.
What do you want him for? Oh, I love your podcast. I'm like, okay, we'll take pictures. But it's kind of weird, man. And here's the weirdest thing about being a conspiracy theorist. It's a very male heavy driven.
I would imagine.
But the chicks that do show up, smoke shows, dude. Smoke shows. I'm like, why are you here? We all look like we live with our mothers. Why are you here? I just like the podcast. I'm like, oh my God. It's crazy, dude.
Well, let's get into some of your stories, too, because I know you, I ask everybody for stories, and yours started with flunking first grade.
Dude, I flunked first grade.
Now, can I ask you this? Were you held back, or did you straight up flunk first grade?
I was held back, but what is the difference?
Because you weren't doing well, or age?
They felt I wasn't mature enough for the next level. Do you know what you'd like, being told you're not mature enough to be a second grader? Like, what am I doing? Eating paste and jerking off?
You're not mature enough to
What are we doing here?
Grade.
I just let you know, whatever teacher held me back, I was eating ass in first grade. So I was mature enough as a motherfucker. I was just armo mature, and you didn't get that shit. You fucking Turk.
Oh, my God.
Dude, I ate ass in first grade. Teresa Gleason, the Gleason sisters, were fucking sexual predators. They were my age, and they were just fucking, we were just getting weird, dog. And I got held back in first grade, and it was very traumatizing.
Yeah, what happened? Do you remember being talked to about
Never.
It? Or
I don't.
Went back to the same
class?
They're
like, yeah, you're doing it again. And my dad was pissed.
That you had to do it?
Oh, yeah. My dad was like, fuck, man, what are we doing to this kid? My mom's like, they think he should do another year. Of course, my mom won. It's very interesting as you get older, how you start understanding your father a little bit more.
Yeah.
You're like, man, I love mom, but women are crazy. And when your dad's like, your mother, I love her, but she's a little, whatever, dad, that's mom, I love her. Now you're like, I get it, dad. I fucking get it.
It's the long game. When you're a parent, you got to wait 30 years or so before you get that kind of acknowledgement
and
awareness.
Yeah, be like, yeah. Okay.
They
yeah,
start having kids, you'll be like, oh, now you see. All
yeah,
right,
my dad's always been like my mom just, like, women love shady dudes. I do a joke about how women love gutter dick. You know what I'm saying? They love gutter dick. The fucking deeper gutter in the gutter, dick, the more they love it. And then they wander around and go, why isn't the world working out? It's like, because you fuck gutter people, okay? And my mom's the same thing. I love my father with all my heart, but he was a thug from Pine Avenue in Niagara Falls, which was this shady area of town. My grandfather was like a cop.
So both your parents from
Niagara Falls, yes.
Upstate New York?
Yep. Well, Western New York, which is okay. Buffalo area.
Gotcha.
So my dad and my mom, they got married. My mother had two little thug kids, two little knuckleheads, me and my brother. And we grew up to be knuckleheads. And she's like, why did this happen to me? Well, because you dated gutter dick, mom. That's why. And so we were always really crazy. And like, I was held back in first grade. I remember watching my friends go to second. I was like, what is going
on? And you're
in
the same school, like elementary school. The next class is right there.
But the only thing that was funny about it is like, I didn't get one word wrong on the spelling because I had all the old exams. And I just
not because you knew it, because yeah, you cheated.
I didn't get one.
Not because you learned it yeah, the first time.
I know this one. I remember that one.
I got Mississippi in the first grade.
Yeah, dude. Cheating out the gate.
That lazy ass teacher didn't even bother updating the fucking quizzes.
You know, as a conspiracy theorist, I realized, like, I love teachers. My parents are both teachers. I have none but love for teachers.
Wait, your parents are teachers?
They were. They're
and agreed
retired
to let you repeat?
Yeah.
Wow. I wouldn't think.
So that lets you know I was really retarded, right?
Two teachers under the same roof agreed. Oh, shit. God. Let's take a quick break to tell you about our first sponsor, Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is really easy and getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. I've said it before, College was the biggest mistake. I got the credit card, started living off of it, paying rent, paying this, paying that. Next thing you know, 40 grand in debt. Your credit score is a mess. I wish I had something like Upstart back when I was in college. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you, and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes. And the best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day. Over 300,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/honeydew to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes and will not affect your credit. That's upstart.com/honeydew. Our next sponsor is Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning community with thousands of classes covering dozens of creative and entrepreneurial skills. Premium membership gives you unlimited access so you can join the classes and communities that are just right for you. So whether you want to fuel your curiosity, creativity, or even career, Skillshare is the perfect place to keep you learning and thriving. We just had an intern start here today at your mom's house. Got them working on film and video, photography, graphic design, all through Skillshare. You can go right in there, pick your classes, and work right through that portal that way. Skillshare is also incredibly affordable, especially when compared to pricey in-person classes and workshops. An annual subscription is less than 10 bucks a month. Because Skillshare is sponsoring this video, you can sign up with the link in the description. You can get a 2-month free trial. So go check it out. Head over to skl.sh/roosterteeth to get a 2-month free trial. Our next sponsor is MyBookie. At the end of a hard week, it is great to sit down, take some time off, and watch some football. You got game-winning touchdowns on 2-minute drives. There's running backs racing down the sidelines with no one to stop them. Lamar Jackson's making history. There's nothing else like the NFL, and there's no better way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. So do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts and better lines than any other sports book. Don't forget, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on, and mybookie.ag is the best in the business. It's where I play and where you should too. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if they weren't the best, all right? Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet this football season, bet with MyBookie. If you're the kind of person that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings, and no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of the year. Join now, and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code HONEYDEW to activate the offer. That's promo code HONEYDEW. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Now let's get back to the do.
So I did, and I went, you know, and it was just like, I was never.
Were you picked on because you repeated, or do you remember?
Not really.
So were you driving in ninth grade then? Were you 16 in ninth grade? Yeah, you were the early driver, right? Early
driver, driving this Oldsmobile that I bought. My parents bought my brother a brand, like a, oh, like a, not a, a vintage, like, Mustang. I had to buy my own car.
Was he older or younger?
My brother's, oh, dude. My brother's younger than me.
No, he got the baby, got all this.
And my brother is, we'll get into, oh, yeah, I lived in my brother's shadow. My brother was the number one high school bowler and number one golfer.
First of all, you guys had a bowl. I know we had a golfing team, but I didn't know it till a friend of mine's like, I'm on the golfing team. Like, we have that, but I'm – and Maryland, the state sport, well, it used to be jousting, then it was duck pin bowling, and people, a lot of people don't know duck pin.
What's it now, mugging
lacrosse,
people?
I think it's – that's only one area of the state. Lacrosse, it's lacrosse. But
lacrosse it,
it,
be
it
so
may be the
bigger.
Official, unofficial, but duck pin is three. They're smaller balls. Yep. You know duck pin?
Yep.
Yeah. And then there's, what is it, candle pin or stick in Boston up in Massachusetts? Like that
we call that pussy bowling.
Yeah. Okay? So what are you, regular bowling?
Yeah. Oh, dude, okay. I come from a long line of
bowlers.
Are
you a good bowler?
Dude, my grandpa, I wish, like, I have very little regrets in my life. One regret is that I left my parents so early. The other regret.
How old were you?
I was 18. Right as soon as I graduated, boom, I was off to Vegas. My father did brainwashing mind games on me. He was like, you know, you should think about like moving out of state and dropping Vegas on me all the time. Little did I know he wanted me to go so he could buy a house I could live in so he could write off his taxes and go gamble every month. That was his, that was straight up my father's fucking propaganda on me since I was a kid. And it worked because I went to UNLV only because they had an Armenian basketball coach. That's the only reason I ended up going to Vegas. But
was there a large Armenian population in your community when you grew up in Buffalo?
Well, we're mostly in Niagara Falls where I went to, which was 200 miles, normally a 3.5 hour drive. My mother, 6 hour drive. 6 hour drive. She would drive so slow. And I was talking the other day to my friend about, like, they were so naive back then. Like, we would be on a 6 hour drive going 200 miles an hour, going 200 miles on this trip. They would throw a 6-pack of soda in the back for me and my brother, which is the equivalent of throwing an 8-ball in the back.
Yeah, a child's 8-ball.
You know, that's a kid's 8-ball. I do joke about when you go to, like, a kid's Christmas parade. It's like they're Burning Man, right?
Yeah.
And they just fucking eat sugar. That's their DMT. Well, like back in the day, they would throw us a 6-pack and we would pound it. And then by the end, I was just fucking we would make up new belts for my brother to have. Like, you're the WEC champion. Like, new ECT champion. Dude's getting a new fucking belt. I was like, Macho Man. And my brother was like, Joe. You know, fight. So I would just beat my brother. This is how crazy my parents are. They convinced us because they wanted to spend Christmas in Niagara Falls that Santa came a day early just for us. That this dude who's just going all over the planet,
right, yeah,
decided I'm gonna redo
his whole schedule for you guys.
And we're like, fuck, man, Santa's a good dude. Until fucking next door neighbor, bitch,
yeah, right,
tells me at 4 I'm being lied to by everybody I love. Right? You bitch!
All right, let's go back to your number one bowling brother here.
So my brother,
he was the best bowler in the state of New York.
In high school bowler. My brother was...
What age? Like soon, all through
high school? Out the gate, dude. Out the gate. My grandfather was a great bowler. Okay, back to my regrets, and I'll get into where I'm talking about. I regretted that, leaving my parents. I regretted auditioning for Chelsea lately when the show was about to start and doing jokes about women sleeping their way to the top in front of Chelsea and the guy she fucked for her show, okay? That was... I cost myself $1 million. But, you know, I'm so punk rock. I'm like, I'm great. My manager's like, oh, fuck, man. There goes that paycheck. So I did that. And I think another one is that my grandfather bowling. Had a bowling trophy. He picked up the 7-10 split, which is the biggest, hardest thing to pick up. It's the two pins over here. And I fucking, and they just threw it out, dude. And I wish I would have gotten that. I'm at that age now where I'm like collecting all the stuff of my grandfather's generation, because I feel like that's slowly disappearing. So I want that. That's what I wish I had. So I come from a very long line of boners. And boners. I come from a boner. I think we all came from a boner. But then, you know, then my father was a bowler in a bowling city. Like Friday night bowling,
this is like
was
Kingpin
huge
here
at Court Lanes.
Really?
Huge.
And what is it? Is it tournaments? Is it
leagues, dude? I
okay,
mean,
leagues.
Grown men fighting, cheers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I need this action, dog.
That's all you got.
Yeah, I'm just watching like white trash chicks hanging out. One week showing up pregnant, knowing bad decisions went down. I fucking loved it, dude. But my brother was like amazing at it. He got so he would just hang out there. My brother was about 13, 14 years old, hanging out with grown ass men,
kicking their asses.
Dude, just lighting people up. My brother at one point could bowl a 300 with both hands.
Come on.
I'm not lying. That's a strike. For you don't know. That's a strike every time
you roll the ball.
And he could do it with his right and his left.
Damn.
That's water walking where I'm coming from. Right? That's like fucking rock and roll Jesus, dude. That was my brother. And I lived in his shadow. He's 2 years younger than me. And I lived in my brother's shadow. Because I have one, and we'll get into it, but I have one skill, shit talking. And like you can't do that in college. There's no, I mean, in high school, you can't, there's nowhere to get that out. Like how, when you're like that. So I really had nothing. My whole goal in high school, when early on, like seventh, eighth grade, I just wanted to be the first white guy to play for John Thompson at Georgetown. That's all I wanted to do.
Yeah, right. Because
it was all like deep black players, right? I fell in love with basketball with Patrick Ewing. He would come in and they would just fucking play like boom, 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 boom. And I loved it. I fell in love with basketball was Patrick Ewing, man. And so I always wanted to be the first white, because he never had even light-skinned brothers on his team. It was all like the fucking deep space black, right? And nothing, like I got no chance here. But that's all I wanted to do. And I could never make a basketball team. I always got cut. I always got cut for this cat named Scott Cooper. He's a very nice kid. Not, you know, he was just trying to make it too. No hate, but I just never made it. And I'm very thankful for that, because that's the reason why it took me 23 years in comedy to make it to where I feel like I'm at a place where I'm like, okay, this is where I've always wanted to be, and didn't give up. Because I've never had anybody who ever was like an insider dial me up. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, here, boom, go. I've never, ever had. I've literally only been the only one to like believe in myself. So I got that. I'm like, fuck this, man. I know I'm good. And so I just had to find the thing that I could do. But I never, ever got down because it didn't work out. I always was like, nah, dude, I got that. I know I'm good. I'm going to keep going. And I'm very thankful. I remember when a cousin of mine had his son got cut from a team, and he's like, oh, man, I just don't want him. I'm like, this is the best thing ever to happen. Like, the blessings in my life is I failed really hard. I flunked first grade. I got cut from everything comedically. Like, outside of the comedy store, nobody wanted anything to do with me for a very long time. So I got failure early. So, like, I never... Like, when something doesn't work out now, I don't get upset about
right.
it. It's like, on to the next one. Okay, they don't like it. The next person will like it. And you just keep going. And, like, those are the blessings in my life, you know? So I learned that very early from getting cut from everything. But my brother was a stud. My father was a great baseball player. My brother was a phenomenal baseball player, you know? And I just...
He was just Mr. Athlete.
He was white sport Bo Jackson. That's what we called him, the white Bo Jackson. He could dominate white people's sports. And he was great at it.
Like bumper pole and shit.
Yeah, you name a white sport, foosball, you name it, he could dominate it. And that's just the way. I never clicked like that. That was just not my thing. Are we going to the next topic, or am I bringing up the next thing? Okay.
We're just talking.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure what we're doing. So I had a crazy dad, and I love my father with all my heart. I learned so much from him. Both
are your parents
good
still together?
No, no, no.
No. Well, how old were they when you divorced?
My mother was ride or die until the day my brother went to ASU. And then as soon as that gate closed and he was on the flight, my mom's like, fuck you. Get a ride home. And fucking left. And they broke up. Listen, my
That's,
brother.
So at your... 18, how old, you're 4 years different, you said? How many
years? We're about two and a half.
Two. So 20, you're 20 when your parents divorced?
Yeah.
Officially divorced.
Yeah.
But it's not great, or it was just whatever at the time.
I very much made sure I didn't get involved in the divorce, because I didn't want to learn about how my dad, now I realize is human, but back then might not have been the best of my mother. So I didn't want to learn anything about that. Whereas my brother dove right in, and it affected his relationship with my father. And I love them both, and they're both in my life. But I didn't want to get in the middle of that because I didn't want to know what my dad did. And now I realize my dad was from that generation who had to get married right out the gate. Like, if you weren't married by 21, you were considered a faggot, right? That's pretty much it. You were like, dude, you're sucking everybody's dick. Why aren't you married? And my dad wasn't like that. He got married very early, and he fucking, I don't think that's what he wanted. And I think it affected in the long run. But I learned stuff from my dad. A big thing I learned from my father, which he didn't tell me, but I watched him, was like, if you're going to break the rules, you have to be the nicest person in the world. Because eventually when you break the rules, you're going to get caught. And at that moment, how you treated people will determine how they treat you.
That's right.
And we could see it in comedy. There's some people get caught stealing jokes. And if they're an asshole, dude, you are done. The hyenas are coming. But if you're a nice guy, everyone's like, hey, dude, he's not perfect. He made a mistake. I like it. He's a nice guy. Don't let it happen again. Let's all move on. And you're allowed back in the group. I learned that very early. You got to break rules, man. You got to break rules. Yeah. The rules are set.
But you don't have to be an asshole.
You don't have to be. I don't understand asshole comics.
Yeah. I just don't understand asshole people.
Yeah, I don't either.
You don't have to be an asshole. You don't have to be an asshole.
You know, there's some people who are, like, super successful, like Chris D'Elia. He treats everybody so nice.
Yeah, he's great.
The guy doesn't have to.
Right. No.
But he's the nicest dude to everybody. Yeah. It's like, why would you want to be that? Why would you want to be in the ha-ha business and be an asshole?
Right. You're supposed to be laughing and having a good time. You want to be an asshole.
I mean, I remember coming to L.A. I just see a motherfucker's mistake being funny on stage for being a tough guy. They get off stage showing attitude to everybody. I'm like, I'm going to break this dude's face right now, and then he'll never tell a joke again. And it's like, why do that? I learned that very early, man. It's like, I watch people. I remember being in conversation with a couple comics and managers and being completely marginalized based on because of my resume. And I'm like, I'm never going to do that to anybody. Like, everybody has a dream. And sometimes how I treated people when they were running around open mics is the only reason I worked. Because they later got you going on going, hey, dude, I got something for you. You're always very nice to me. People are people, dude. And we're dealing with dreams. I really hate when bookers talk to comics like they have something to offer to this thing. You got a position, dude. And, you know, there's some nice bookers out there. But, you know, some of these guys talk to comics like, dude, you aren't the product. If we walk away, this thing collapses.
Yeah.
Be nice.
If there's no one to book if we all go away.
Yeah. It's like there's no reason, like, especially when you're dealing with people's dreams. Like, I always get asked to judge comedy club shows, and I hate it. I hate it. You know? Because you're like, you got to tell somebody, oh, dude, your dream isn't going to happen. And, like, that's not my thing because it's not me to tell you, like, your dream. And I also tell people, it's like, sometimes the goalpost changes. And at some point, you realize there is no goal line. The only goal line is, like, when you take your last breath. We're like, I fucking made the world a better place. I treat people around me. Like, when I leave, people are going to miss me. That's the only thing you have. All the money in the fucking world.
None of it matters.
You can't bribe death.
Nope.
That day is coming. And when you take your last breath, I mean.
I say all the time, too, all the death I've been through, no matter how much money I had or didn't have, it wouldn't have made any of that feel any better. None of it.
Yep.
People don't fucking remember you. I've heard people say, you know, like, when you die, nobody's going to be like, man, he had a great couch. You know what I mean? Nobody gives a fuck about that shit.
Who said the quote? It was great, and I can't remember. Someone famous said, people would stop caring what people think about them if they knew how little people thought about them after they died. You know, meaning, like, their accomplishments.
Right.
Like, nobody ever's like, oh, that director, blah, blah, blah. Most of the time, it's like, dude, that guy started a homeless shelter. That guy, that's when they talk about you.
Right.
They don't talk about this amazing movie or these, it's like nobody does. Like, good, like all the great movies of the 70s, you bring them up to kids today, they don't know anything about it. And that was the golden era of movies.
Yeah.
Nobody gives a shit. But there's people who talk about, like, fucking, oh, this guy helped homeless people, this people, you know, it's like, that's what really matters, getting out of your own way. So when, you know, divorce, my parents got divorced much later, but I had friends of mine who got divorced very early. They were that first wave of divorce.
Are they the ones that also got married early, like pretty quick out of college and stuff?
One of my friends did. They all got married. I'm the only one who didn't. I think they might have got married early, but if it affected them. And you, because it wasn't the norm that it is now. Like, everyone's parents get divorced. You're like, yeah, it happens. And then everybody, then it was fresh.
Right.
And it was raw. And it was real. And it affected them. And therefore, it affected me because they were my best friends. Right. And it hardened some dudes. And some dudes got really nasty. So we stopped physically fighting with each other. And we started verbally annihilating each other. And we would go to this one bar, this one pizza place called Pontillo's. And I used to work at Pontillo's. But
are we in Vegas or are we in upstate New York? Okay.
Pontillo's. I once got a $100 tip from a guy just drunk. Gave me a pizza, gave me $100. And I was like, damn, I'm winning, you know? So we would sit in this booth. And whoever had the seat all the way in got lit the fuck up.
The guy that can't get out.
Yeah, the guy who can't get out. And, dude, it was just like, it was like John Wicking. Everybody's John Wicking each other at this point. We're just all just unloading everything. But it taught you something. And it's like so funny. If you ever listen to Theo Vaughn, he talks about how he hated his life when he was a kid, so he made stories up. Now you see he's a master of that on stage.
Yeah.
So I became this verbal assassin, like just cutting people. And I remember when I leave high school and go to college, I joined this fraternity, and just out of nowhere, dude, people would say something. They call it the triply low blow, where I just kneecap motherfuckers. They'd be like, you can tell it's triply by the trail of dead, right? So that's what I did, and which is very interesting because it leads into stand-up.
Yeah.
So the first day of my life I ever knew you could do two sets of one day. I didn't think you could do
right.
that.
You didn't even know you could do
I
that.
I didn't even know that. Yeah. So one day, I remember
hearing that one time, too. After a few months in, somebody's like, oh, I did two sets. And I was like, wait, what? You can do that?
Yeah, you can do that?
Yeah.
You can go up twice?
Yeah.
So the first time I go up at UNO, I performed at the University of Nevada three times. Each time, I deep-throated a dog's dick. I just... I'm just bombing on stage, dude. Bombing. So I do this set and I just bomb, man. I just bomb at the school and I'm just fucking feeling. And I'm going to school there and I bombed in my own school. So my friend comes up and he's like, don't worry about it, dude. There's another open mic over here tonight that's played against Sam's. You go up, you're going to fucking do stand up. I go, oh, you can go up twice? He's like, yeah, dude. They do. New York City, they go up five times. I'm like, oh, fuck. I got to get up more. So I show up, and I'm doing stand-up, right? And then this fucking mechanic walks up with jack teeth. And it's the first time I get heckled.
And oh, he's dude, heckling you?
He's heckling me. And I light this dude up. And it was like that moment where Neo realized he's the one where he's like, zing, zing, zing. And I'm like, oh, fuck, this is what I do. Zing. And for 5 minutes, I'm just destroying this guy. And it's like, it's crazy how when you're a kid, what traumatized you as a kid is what you use as a weapon as you're older.
It came right back, made it a strength.
Yeah.
That's fucking great.
It's weird.
Yeah.
So it's like...
It all makes sense eventually. Eventually it all makes sense.
It all makes sense.
Yeah. It makes no sense at all, and it all makes fucking sense.
Like, as a kid, you're like... When you have a kid, you got to fucking... You know, everything is like a minefield. Like, high school's a minefield. And, like, you're just walking through this minefield, and boom! Now, all of a sudden, that's a limp for the rest of your life.
Yeah, right.
That you're fucking dealing with, right? And it's always coming up. So that could either be a limp, or that could be your cool walk that you lose later on to... You know, like, I didn't get any chicks in high school. I got none.
I dated one girl
for a week.
How old were you when you lost your virginity?
17.
Right out of high school.
To Lisa Woods.
Oh, that was Lisa.
Shout out Lisa Woods. You know you're out there. Just killing it. She just walked up. She went to another school called Homer. And Homer and Cortland are the same city, but they just decided to break it up in half. Yet they never talked to each other. And it was very weird. But Lisa Woods, she would come around, and just one night she goes, hey, we're fucking. And I go,
whoa.
What? I'm like, I'm in. And I lost my virginity to Nina Peoples and the Dance Party Machine. Do you remember that show?
I do remember that show.
The Asian chick's like, all right, we just got dancing on. I'm like, yeah, we're dancing, dog. I lasted three strokes in and out. called it a day, thanked her, took some pictures.
Picture.
We're fucking doing Polaroids and shit. Lisa Wood, you out there? I love you, girl. So I didn't get any. I have one girlfriend in high school. And I jerked off on her tits once, and that was the end of the relationship.
That was it.
Yeah, that was it. Shannon Maine was the only girl I ever dated.
Did you go to proms or homecomings or anything?
Oh, God, dude. I do a joke about it, man. I do a joke about how, like, everybody, it's on my new special. You can see that samtriplee.com. He's like, you know, however, it's like, it's the worst time ever to be alive. I'm like, there's way worse, you know? You remember when the asteroid hit the planet, killed the dinosaurs? That was pretty shitty. When Hitler just stormed through Europe, that was pretty fucked up. I'm like, when my prom date left me at prom and went home and fucked a 10th grader, you guys remember that? Because I do. Janice Maroney. Huh? Leave me high and dry.
Janice. Wait, that really happened?
The name was Jason something at the time. Went home and fucked him, leaving me high
and
dry.
Jason and Janice, man.
Jason and Janice.
Wait, so she's your date to what, senior prom?
Yep.
All right, and you're what, 21 at the time?
I'm like Zion Williams, 19. 30.
Yeah, right. So senior prom went. At what point does she leave? The dance? She just bounces after?
We go to
what?
The dance. We yeah, she basically leaves at the dance.
What, boyfriend wasn't at the prom?
Nope.
But nope. Why are you taking a girl that
because
has a boyfriend?
Because I asked her, and then she tried to get me to go. So I'm like, no, dude. Like, between you and me, I'm like, you're the chick who puts out. I want to take you. And then it just didn't happen.
She did. She put out, but
yeah,
not
she put
for
out
you.
For somebody. At least she could let me watch. I'll watch. Anybody want to fuck in front of me, I'll watch. I mean, I'm going to give some notes. Maybe run some plays. Hand you a playbook.
Run
plays. Ring the doorbell. But that's kind of how it went. Now, when I went to college, it was on. You know why? Because funny isn't attractive in high school. Girls don't appreciate a sense of humor. I literally got called by my good friend Corey Spada. I remember her going, listen, if I didn't know you, I would think you're retarded. And I'm like,
she said that.
Yeah. I'm like, what? She's like, you're the biggest
it's first
retard.
Grade all over
right?
again. Got
I'm like, here we go again on my own. Going down the only road I've ever known.
Shit.
Yeah, so I got my prom date, went home and banged in 10th. And the worst part about
10th grader.
A 10th grader. She couldn't even fuck 11th grader, man. She had to go 10th grade. And I was supposed to the weekend of the prom, I was supposed to have my black belt, my brown belt test in JKD, Jeet Kune Do, which is Bruce Lee.
Is it Jeet Kune Do?
Jeet Kune Do.
Yeah, is that say it
what
wrong?
Is it?
I thought it was Jeet Kune Do.
Jeet Kune Do. It's been so long. But
that's
I was
his,
supposed to get my brown
his,
belt.
Yeah.
And I didn't because I wanted to bang Janice Maroney. And now she only bangs black guys. So I had never had a shot.
And you were going for a brown belt, bro. Should have been going for that black belt.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's how it is. But I come from a long line of guys who likes to bang black chicks. Like, that's our thing. My dad right now is dating a woman who used to dance on Soul Train.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, dude. She always talks about it, dude. She's like, I did the funky chicken.
That's
you know?
Great.
So my brother only dates black strippers. He like my brother, who's the greatest high school bowler of all time, now flips strip bars.
What do you mean flips them?
He goes in and like
they improves them, remodels
them. Yeah, he's like the guy from television who goes in and flips. He like goes in, okay, fatty, you're fired, fatty, you're fired, fatty, you're fired, turns it around, gets him going. It's kind of like the Hulk. He comes in, solves a crime, and then leaves town.
Yeah, all right. The old Hulk. Before he was a monster.
You wouldn't like me when I'm horny.
Remember that shit? You were a kid. Oh, man, you couldn't wait for those eyes. Like, oh, here he goes. He hurt his hand. There was no pause in it. Hurry up, get in here. He just hurt himself.
I love how he's like the tiny guy and then this big guy, but the pants still fit.
Always, and they always went back on, too. He was never naked when he went back. His shirt was back on.
The green dick hanging out. That would just solve crime right there. You're like, dude, there's a giant angry guy with the biggest green dick I've ever seen.
A deaf
crime
green dude.
So anyways, there was one black family in my entire city.
Okay.
And they were called the Handys, the Handy family. And they were wonderful people. But the first black chick I ever fell in love with was Francine Handy. She was gorgeous.
How old were you?
I was like 13.
This is like me. It was sixth grade.
My first kiss,
not a French kiss. My first kiss was a black girl, and that was just Tasha.
Black girls gotta give white guys more shots.
I was done. I was hooked.
Once you go white ladies, sprung. Your credit gets right. You know what I'm saying? So I love her, but I mean, she was gorgeous. Tiny waist, giant black tits, deep space black. That's how I love it. I either want deep space black or like too much almond milk in your coffee. That's why I love. I love it. But back in the day, we were seeing the beginning of interracial dating that never happened. And listen, man, if you go watch a porno from the 80s and you see some white chick banging a black guy, just know that chick is a freedom fighter, okay? she's running a revolution because that bitch ain't welcome back home, okay? Wherever she's living, she had to move somewhere else because that shit wasn't allowed back then. That was some very progressive shit. So back in the day, I used to take karate and shit like this. And there was always people popping off, and I never, you know, I was always.
Did you ever use it? You ever have to use it?
I mean, I got a couple fights, but I wasn't really like, dude, even this day, like, I take Krav Maga now. I just take it from this fucking Israeli dude who's been taking it since he was 4. And like, dude, I love it, dude. I love it. But at the end of the day, I'd rather just run, or I'm 46. Why am I fighting with people?
Right. Yeah.
You ever see your friends forgetting? Like, you're 40, bro.
Yeah, you
we
can't
don't
be fighting
this
in your
anymore.
40s. Yeah.
You'll pull a muscle just fucking tensing up the fight. So, this guy, Dan Gary, is his name, dude. And he's one of the most interesting dudes ever because his parents were biracial, right? And, dude, this kid was in eighth grade, Dan Gary. And he was beating the fuck out of senior linemen on the football
team. Damn, in eighth grade?
In eighth grade. I remember,
was he a little guy that had really good technique, or was he also big?
He was a big dude for eight.
Yeah.
But he wasn't bigger.
Right, than the linemen.
And,
yeah.
Dude, I was watching him just knocking out motherfuckers. So one day, there's this big fight at Drex Subs, right? There's this big fight at the sub place. And everybody's fighting. And I'm just trying to stop fights. But Dan's in red line zone. And he's just grabbing dudes and knocking dudes out, right? Dude, he grabs me and he's like, boom. And I'm like, today I say goodbye, right? Today I meet the angel of death. I remember, like, I was like 17 and my life flashed in front. It was 30 seconds of life just flashed in front of me. I had no highlights, by the way. I hadn't fucked anybody. I got cut from everything. I got cut from everything. Dan's a senior. My life flashes. It's just white noise at this point. I've achieved nothing, dude. And he looks back and he's just like, nah. And I go, dude. Dan Garrett just fucking let me live.
He sacrificed
you. He just like threw me back. Like, oh, this fish is too small. So him and his wife, Trisha Brown, a good friend of mine, she just lost her dad, so condolences. Very nice man. They've been together since they were in eighth grade.
Wow.
Eighth grade.
Don't you wish you could have figured out something like that?
Nope. Not at all. I love the flavor, the rainbow. You know, at some point you settle down, but you got to be ready to settle down.
Yeah, you definitely have to.
So peace or all. I know people got married. They got married very early. They're super happy. I know people who not married. Like, there's no one rule. You'll know your rule
when
you're happy.
You create what you want for yourself. That's it.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. For sure. So my whole life has been kind of chaotic. And I almost got killed that first time. Stand-up has always been, like, here's the thing about me. How long have you been doing stand-up?
99.
I started 20 in like years. 93.
20 years.
The first 5 years.
I don't count the first. I did it for like 3 or 4 months in Baltimore, but then I was 7 years off. I did it at 20, didn't start it again until I was 27.
I did 6 years in L.A. I mean, in Vegas. And then I moved to L.A. And, you know, but people got to understand something. Like, when we started in Vegas, we weren't allowed to play the comedy clubs. The local clubs wouldn't let us play because we were too raw. And they were flying in, like, very new comics that do MC. So they were flying in from L.A. Now, it's a wonderful scene, Vegas. There's so many clubs out there, and they have locals.
Got
opening.
A Cellar there now, yeah.
Cellar, Jimmy Kimmel.
Yep.
The L.A. Comedy Club is one of my favorites. They got that dirty at 12:30.
Laugh Factory's out there.
I mean, like, it's a wonderful comedy town now. But when the godfather of Las Vegas comedy is Doug Stanhope. Doug Stanhope started. And then I was the next generation. It was me and Joe Coy. And then now it's where it's at. Like, when I started doing comedy, there was one open mic every other day. And I said, fuck, I got it. So what we would do back before there was even the internet and there's flyers and shit, we would start our own shows and we'd go into the worst bars. We'd be like, what's your worst day? Give us it. And we'd do stand up on that day, and that's how we'd get time. And so I never played comedy clubs, really, up until the last week I was in LA.
Okay.
In Vegas. It was the first time I played comedy clubs. I start showcasing the comedy store because I'm told that's what you're supposed to do. I didn't even know that. So we start showcasing. I got a standing O one time, and Mitzi's like, he's rude. He's disgusting. I'm like, ugh. I killed so hard that they made me a new category, showcase regular. I was able to showcase anytime the industry wanted to see me. So one day, this is Mitzi. Like, Mitzi, this is why people love Mitzi. She saw shit. Nobody bats a thousand, but she saw shit.
She did.
And she knew that. She goes, there's going to be a time where Middle Easterns are going to need a voice. And she put together the Arabian Nights show. Now, Maz Jobrani, who's a G amongst Gs.
Yeah.
Duncan Trussell is the booker. Maz Jobrani is a regular. He's been picked up. He calls me up. He's like, Trips, I think I can get you in. She wants to do a Middle Eastern night. You're Middle Eastern? I'm like, I'm Armenian. He's like, same thing. I'm like, not really.
It is to these people.
He's like, fuck it, dude. You want it or not? I'm like, I got in. So he goes, Duncan wants you to call him. I'm like, what's up, dog? He's like, hey, Trips, I think I can get you in. I'm like, what's up? He goes, okay, she's doing an Armenian. She's doing a Middle Eastern night. You're Armenian. It's the same thing, right? I'm like, not really. But he's like, okay, here's what she wants. And she gives me the formula at the time, which was one joke about your ethnic group, one joke about one of your parents, and then your favorite bit. Well, this was back when Joey Diaz was showcasing.
Mm-hmm.
And Joey was running the open mic. And one day I got off, he's like, Triple A, I love that bit about Asians on Ecstasy. It's so fucking funny. And it was about how Asians are so smart. Their visuals are better than everybody else's.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, we're all on 8-bit, right? And they're doing, like, Dolby Digital sound and shit. So I'm like, okay, it's going to get... I go up there, I do boom, boom, boom. Well, at the time, when you showcase for Mitzi, you would always worry about your showcase getting hijacked. So I look out, and there's Paul Mooney talking to her. And I thought Paul Mooney hated me, but it turns out he sat there and he told her, Mitzi, this kid's really funny. He needs to be in at the comedy store. So I get off stage, and you always have to go kiss the ring. And I'm like, hey, Mitzi, thank you so much for your showcase. She's like, oh my God, you're so funny. Are you Syrian? And I go, to this day, I don't know. To that, I'm going to be honest, I didn't know what a Syrian was. I'm from upstate New York. I flunked first grade, okay?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I don't know what a Syrian is, but I'm like, yeah, I'm Syrian. I'm totally... Love being Syrian, love Syrian food. I love my Syrian grandmother, her little babushka, you know. She's like, okay, you're great. I want you to showcase in the main room. And Jay Davis, who had this amazing show that I don't feel like enough people know about, which was Dublin's, he was dominating. Mm-hmm. They decided to start giving him his own shows. So I showcased. Now, this is how cool Maz Jobrani is. Maz wants to get me... Ahmed, Aaron Caterin, but he's going to try to slip in Brett Ernst too, because Brett wasn't a regular either. So it's time for Maz go up. He hides. They're like, we can't find Brett, but we got this really funny
guy.
Wow. Can we show you Brett?
That's how he did it?
Brett fucking showcases Aaron Cater, Ahmed, Brett Ernst, and myself all get picked up on the same night. Made regulars.
That's fucking awesome.
That's Maz Jobrani.
That's awesome.
So I proceed comedy. I just get picked up. The Laugh Factory's the first club to pick me up. The Comedy Store is the last club to pick me up. But I'm in at the store, and I go to Montreal. I bomb spectacularly in Montreal. I follow Corey Holcomb, who at the time was a 20-year vet.
Yeah.
And a How killer. Old is this guy?
And a killer.
Like 95?
Yeah, and a killer. Yeah.
So I'm finding 95-year-old Corey. He crushes. I go last because I did this showcase, and I tapped into something I own now, but I didn't get that. It's kind of like when Superman learns to fly for the first time, and he can't do it again. But I tapped into something, and I crushed. So they wanted me to close out the show. I've never even done comedy clubs, hardly at that point. I'm just a street kid. I bomb spectacularly. I'm a dead man walking in Hollywood. I mean, I'm dead. I'm radioactive. The only person to ever show me love was Mitzi Shore. She's the only person. Even the first time I got my first spot, I'm one of two people to ever get their first regular spot be a main room spot for Mitzi Shore. It's Roseanne Barr and myself.
Wow.
So obviously she knew we were conspiracy theorists. Okay? So I remember following Roger Rabbit, Charles
Fleischer.
Now Fleischer was a remnant from the older time, mm-hmm. and he was doing like an hour on stage just to prove a point. And I didn't know how hard he was to follow. I went up there, man, and when I tell you I bombed, I mean I bombed. And I'm like, well, so much for ever being a regular here. I bombed. I was like, well, it's nice knowing everybody. I'll see you soon. I hope it works out. I get a call. She wants you to go up again. And that's why I knew the store was different. And I say this to everybody. I believe this in all my heart. It is the Comedy Store versus everyone.
Yeah.
When it comes to saving comedy in terms of political correctness. Like, dude, you do you. You better be fucking funny
that's
at it.
That's right.
But whatever you do, you fucking do it.
Yeah.
And he fucking, and dude, I've never to this day. One night I was so drunk on stage on New Year's Eve, I walked 300 people.
Wow. That's the room. That's the room.
Yeah. She banned me for 2 days. And
two
had
days,
me fucking
it.
Back. Dude, the funniest thing. I watched a blowjob competition happen at the Comedy Store about 12 years ago. It was like, who had a bigger dick, Ari Shaffir or Dan Madonis? And this porn star was there, and she's blowing both of them. And Dan Madonis lost the big dick competition, and he got banned for 2 days.
2 days.
You're like, you're banned for the weekend. Get the fuck out of here, little dick motherfucker.
Dude, I love you so much. Thank you for coming on here.
I said a couple words here, but you know it is what it is.
You said a lot of words here. One more time, please promote whatever you'd like.
I would like to promote my special called Zero Fucks and Armageddon. They're available at samtripley.com. I love being here. Ryan, I could not be more happy for you. You deserve everything you got. And hope I'm excited to see where this takes you because people don't understand. I tell people all the time, I'm like, work on your stand-up, work on your podcast and YouTube. Because if you blow that up, you can get all the stand-up you want. And comics get sad, but I go, like, dude, you see these people on YouTube. What makes them so great? They just do it. Nobody's life got worse because they worked on their internet.
Right.
So seeing you blowing up, I hope it goes, you deserve all of it. Dude.
Thank you, brother.
I love you to death.
I love you too, man.
My band?
Well, we'll see. But you're gonna repeat this episode like you repeated the first fucking grade. We'll have you come back, brother. I'm Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to y'all next week.